This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, the first day of November 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Athletic Club, offering a network of support, information, and guidance to help achieve fitness goals and aspirations for individuals, friends, and families. Information regarding fitness training, weight loss, healthy living, and more is available at fayac.com or 587-0500.
In a few minutes on Ozarks, Governor Mike Beebe answers questions from people around the state. He'll discuss jobs, politics, the Arkansas lottery, and more. Plus a preview of tonight's Munich Symphony performance at Walton Arts Center, and we review the first ever issue of a local food guide. We begin this edition of Ozarks with a story of research connected to the University of Arkansas.
More than 1 million Americans are diagnosed with cancer annually, and more than half of all cancer patients receive radiation therapy at some point during their treatment. Radiation destroys cancer cells or slows their growth rate by applying high energy rays to tumors. Belul Saka, who recently completed his doctorate in industrial engineering at the University of Arkansas, is a research scientist who helped develop mathematical optimization models that will make radiation treatment plans safer and more efficient than conventional plans. Saka worked under the direction of Ron Reardon, Distinguished Professor of Industrial Engineering. Radiation oncologist Dr. Mark Langer of Indiana University also contributed clinical expertise to the research. Reardon has been working on radiation planning optimization along with his students for more than a decade. He says while a dissertation requires a lot of advanced academic research, it can be fun.
I always say it's like, I like to compare it to gold mining, in that you dig and you dig and you dig and all you get is dirty. And then one day you break through and there's this glittering thing there and you say, ah! Now I understand. And that unfortunately, it doesn't happen every day. But if you keep at it in a disciplined way, you eventually find that gold, and that's what's fun. Those are the moments you remember for the rest of your life.
The researchers achieve optimization in terms of delivering the maximum dose of energy to the tumor without undue risk to surrounding healthy tissues. This research emphasizes the importance of taking into account the changes of a tumor during the course of a radiation treatment.
Unlike a lot of medical treatments, radiation therapy is not done in one session. If you're going to have heart surgery or something, you have one long day, recovery week, and that's it. But this is done in like 25 to 50 sessions, 5 days a week for several weeks. And yet almost all the planning right now starts with computer images of the tissues and develops a plan and then sticks with it the whole time. Well, during that time, a lot happens, particularly to the tumor. I don't want to get into too much detail here, but the basic issue in this planning is that you literally want to nuke the tumor. You want to get the maximum radiation you can on the tumor. But the tumor is usually in the middle of a lot of other good stuff. And so the trick is to find a way to damage the tumor without doing too much damage to the surrounding tissues.
One of the ways to do that is by delivering beamlets from multiple angles. Reardon explains there is a device that rotates all the way around patients so beams can be directed at them from different angles.
And that means that all those angles hit the tumor, but they hit different good stuff. So the radiation to the good stuff is a lot smaller than what comes to the tumor. So that's one of the basic tools that they use already. But we wanted to get in to think about adjusting the plan as you go along as a consequence of things that have happened to the tumor during the evolution of the treatment. Because tumors shrink, and they also change biologically. And so that should affect the plan. Part of the reason nobody had done much about this until the last few years is that they would take new imaging, and imaging's expensive. But they recently developed pretty cheap imaging tools that you can, and in the process of delivering the radiation and Friday's treatment, you can get a pretty good image that we could use to replan next week. So that becomes viable. And so that's most of the Beowulf's piece of it. I had three or four students, but his piece has mostly been about this adaptive element, which only just makes sense when there's 30 sessions, 50 sessions, things have moved.
Reardon explains there are two ways the tumor can change.
One of it is change in shape as some of the tumor dies or at least becomes inactive. The other thing is the biology. This is really not very well understood right now, but we thought we were going to go ahead and experiment with it. The different parts of the tumor have different degrees of oxygen content, oxygenation. And that turns out to affect how they absorb radiation. So if they're highly oxygenated, the radiation really works. If they're with a very low oxygen content, it's very resistant to the radiation. So if you want to kill that spot, you better hit with more radiation. All right, and so you have what we've done is shaped our beams so that they adjust to the oxygen content at different parts of the tumor, and so they target more on the parts that are radiation resistant, and so that's a different kind of adaptation.
The development of intensity modulated radiation therapy, or IMRT for short, has allowed doctors to deliver radiation more precisely.
IMRT, something we didn't invent, but that's a huge step forward because now you don't just have open beams and closed beams, you have shaped beams. In the old days, they actually, when I first went down to Dr. Langer's office, they had a machine shop in the area because they still had to do some shaping. So what they would do is they would have an Antoinette block, which they would shape that cut a certain shape of hole and put that on the front of the beam before they started treating you, because that's the only way they could shape it in those early days. But now they've got this IMRT and the Muldig-Aeff collimator that takes care of all that. So it's an awfully big advance in being precise about what you're hitting.
The way the researchers' optimization models work is through the use of mathematics.
We can formulate this as a system of equations and variables, and then we can solve that, and it will tell us how much to put on each little square in each angle, and at any particular time in the tumor, in the evolution of the treatment. And so given we have... the image tells us what is the shape of the tissues, and then exactly where are they in the body, and then the mathematics says, all right, if that's where they are, here's how you should hit them. That's the mathematics that I've done for 40 years, but it's really applicable here, and it's very exciting that it works on something important.
In order for these models to be put into practice, Reardon says they will probably have to be fitted into commercial software used by hospitals. He says there are others working on similar things, and he believes these models will be incorporated into some of the commercial software in the next couple of years. Reardon says he and his students are both excited about how their research could help others.
We feel like we're sort of setting the technology for people to really improve the quality of the delivery of radiation therapy. And that's a very big deal because something like half of all cancer patients get radiation therapy. So it's not like it's a boutique treatment. It's very common. So if it can be improved and made more precise, that's a potential big gain for everybody, or a lot of patients in terms of extended life and in some cases life at all, but in other cases at least more years of good living. And it makes it kind of excited from that point of view, as well as from the mathematical point of view, which is more like what I've been doing most of my career.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Last week, Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net sat down with Governor Mike Beebe to ask him questions about the economy, state leadership, and presidential politics. It was the latest in a series of conversations with the governor using questions supplied by state residents. The governor was asked early in the conversation about a replacement for the late Maria Haley, who was the head of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, and if the current interim director would become the permanent director of the AEDC.
I have huge confidence in Grant Tenniel, and he's over there as the interim director, and apparently they love him over there, and the staff, they get along very well, and they work well together. I really do need him back. He does a great job in the governor's office as one of our two deputy chiefs of staff. He takes a lot of burden off of Morrill, and he's just a good, sound thinker and a good manager. I wish I had two of him, then I could spare one of him. So in terms of long-term solution, that's not my preference. May end up that way from just lack of ability to do anything else. But my preference is that he be the interim until we find a replacement for Maria, which in and of itself is going to be highly difficult because Maria was so unique.
Where are we in the search process?
We're looking. We're talking. We've talked to some folks. Unfortunately, some of the folks that we were really interested in and would really like to have make a lot more money than what we can afford to pay. A lot of them are national or international in terms of their current positions. You know, that was the beauty of Maria. I shamed her into coming back. She was making a lot more money with Kissinger McClarty in the private sector. But I told her she owed it to the people of Arkansas, because if it wasn't for the people of Arkansas and giving her the chance to start her economic development career here at the old AIDC, she'd have never had those chances to be in the Clinton administration and to be in the private sector with Henry Kissinger and Mac McClarty. And she never would have made all that money. And so she owed it back to the people of Arkansas to come back and use her expertise, even at less money. And it worked. And she was that kind of wonderful person. She gave up significant salary to come back and pay back the people who gave her a chance at the American dream. And for somebody who was from the Philippines, it's a great American success story and an American give back story. So far, I've not had any luck with that same argument with some other people, but we're continuing to look. We don't have any individual currently selected, but we're looking, and our standards are pretty high.
You want to tell me who's turned you down?
Nope.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
I've got a couple of questions. Do you support Obama for re-election in 2012? What do you see happening with the Republican presidential field? And just, I mean, you've been in politics for a long time. So yeah. What's your feel on Obama's influence in Arkansas next year in the elections? What, your personal support? How does that work?
I think you'd have to be living in a cave. Not to believe that Obama doesn't stand a lot of chance of winning Arkansas. All the numbers I've seen, not just this, the more recent ones, but for the last couple years, and going all the way back to the election, show that he's got about a 30, 31, 32% approval rating with very high negatives. And if you remember, Roby, if my memory serves me correctly, only Oklahoma gave McCain a higher percentage than Arkansas. Arkansas was the second worst state in the nation percentage-wise in votes, as I recall, for Obama. So I don't think he's going to carry Arkansas. I'm probably going to vote for him. It depends on I assume he's going to be the Democratic nominee. But you ask about the Republican field. You know, that changes. The leader changes, it seems to me, every month. You know, for a while, Bachman was the flavor of the day or flavor of the month and was the most popular. Then Perry hit the scene and really skyrocketed up to the front. Now, apparently, Kane has done the same thing. The one constant that I've noted in all of this is Romney. He's either leading or a close second every time the front runner seems to change. So if I were betting, if I were guessing, I would guess that Romney probably stands the best chance. And I think Romney would probably, you know, you're asking me stuff that is just pure conjecture, but I think Romney probably the most formidable opponent that Obama would have. Now, I personally know John Huntsman. I don't think he stands a chance, but he's really a good guy,
okay.
And he's really a smart guy, and he really did a great job in Utah. He is somebody, he's a problem solver. He's pragmatic. He tries to go, he'd be the kind of guy that tried to go fix the economy.
I got a couple of state employee questions here. This first one is from Holly Pat, or Pat Holly. I'm not sure which way that is designed there. When will state employees know the percentage amount that will be calculated based on their yearly performance evaluations of 2011?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. We'll try that one again.
But I tell you what we can do. We can try to get an answer to the question,
sure.
And then you can post it. Don't you post stuff somewhere?
We've got an email address here, okay. So we can do that. Right. Can you give state employees an insight as to their COLA for July 2012?
No, and, state employees have not enjoyed raises or COLAs as they used to in the past. But part of the reason for that is, you know, the economy. And I'm pretty conservative in budgeting. And while I know it's difficult sometimes for state employees, I'd ask them to look at the bright side. We hadn't fired them. Like most of these states have done. I mean, that in terms of layoffs, I mean, we're seeing state policemen, we're seeing prison guards, we're seeing all sorts of state employees either furloughed, go to 4-day weeks with cuts in pay, or just totally be fired because all these states can't balance their budget or because all these states are in such dire financial straits. We've been able to avoid that in Arkansas. Part of the reason we've been able to avoid it is because we've been conservative in our budgeting, and part of the negative part of that for state employees is they haven't seen the kind of raises or COLAs that they were used to in the past. I'm sorry about that, but we'll continue to try to. It's more important for me to make sure they keep their job than whether or not they get a raise.
Okay. Will the budget session in 2012 address anything besides the budget? Can you think of anything?
Yes, possibly. But it'd be along the same lines of what we already set a precedent for, and that's primarily the lottery. You know, that the lottery scholarships, mm-hmm. that was always contemplated to have to require some degree of an annual look at, like a budget, because it's new and because of the volatility. And that's the only thing we considered in the last fiscal session other than just the appropriation bills. That's a possibility. There's nothing in concrete about any of that. But if you're asking, is there anything I foresee that's possible, just like we did in the first fiscal session, that'd be about the only thing I would contemplate. Either my office or the legislature would probably, the majority of the legislature would probably be amenable to. I think the legislature kept faith, and I think they still want to keep faith with the people that said, look, if we give you the right to have annual sessions for budgets, keep it at that. Don't expand it. Don't make it something. Don't go into a full-time legislature. Don't expand it to things that we didn't intend for you to expand it to. And, you know, most of the legislature's pretty good about listening to people. Some of them aren't, but most of them are.
You mentioned the lottery here, and this will be our last question here. There's been a lot of turmoil at the state lottery with the turnover over there. Are you involved in trying to help that process sort out? Are you offering any direction? Are there some things that you want to see specifically addressed with new leadership?
Yeah, I'd like to see specifically addressed much lower salaries. Other state lottery directors and other state lottery executive personnel are run with salary levels that weren't as high as what they were paying before to the previous folks. Now, I understand that was a startup, and that was important, and there was some premium paid in order to get it started efficiently, and they apparently did a really good job of that. That would be something I would be interested in. But in terms of being directly involved in trying to locate new executive personnel, that's the commission's job. I'm available if they want to visit with me, and if I see something that or get advance notice of something I think that requires me to comment, I'll be glad to comment to the individual members, or if necessary, even publicly. So far, that hadn't occurred, and so far, it hadn't needed to occur.
Governor Mike Beebe talked with Roby Brock from our content partner, TalkBusiness.net, last week. The conversation was the latest in the Ask the Governor series that takes place several times a year. You can see and hear more from the question and answer session at TalkBusiness.net. Support for content from TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. online at mitchellwilliamslaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at bankozarks.com. And Verizon, offering small business solutions, including high-speed mobile broadband, wireless email, global services, and push-to-talk. More information at a Verizon communication store or online at vzw.com/small business.
Earth, sky.
Today, ocean acidification, a change in ocean pH caused by increased emissions of CO2 or carbon dioxide in our modern world. Earth Sky spoke with marine biologist Joan Kleipas. She told us that excess CO2 from the atmosphere makes the oceans more acidic and reduces the amount of carbonate needed by some ocean creatures to form their shells.
When we think about a lot of marine organisms, things like corals, clams, oysters, things that grow hard shells, those shells are made of calcium carbonate. If you reduce the amount of carbonate in the ocean, then you reduce the ability of those organisms to secrete their shells or their skeletons.
Dr. Kleipas of the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Colorado is a winner of a 2011 Heinz Award.
And we often refer to it as being similar to osteoporosis. So there's just fewer of the building blocks available to build those hard parts.
Her work involves experimentation with algae at reef sites to remove carbon dioxide from local waters.
I like to call these nature's masterpiece. If we lose coral reefs, we're really losing something that nature has taken many, many millions of years to produce.
Kleipas said she's optimistic about her line of research. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Tonight, the Walton Arts Center stage will be full. The Munich Symphony will perform Mozart's Requiem, and Ozarks at Large's Katie Hendrickson has this preview.
If you've never heard Mozart's Requiem performed live, tonight provides an excellent opportunity to do so. Philippe Enchaumont brings his Munich Symphony Orchestra, along with the American choir Gloria de Contours, to the Walton Arts Center to perform the entirety of the Requiem, along with some Schoenberg. I spoke to Philippe yesterday afternoon via phone from his hotel room in Kansas City, where he's on the road with the orchestra and choir to perform the Requiem across the country.
This is an extraordinary program that so far is a big success everywhere. And it's many combinations. First of all, it's an intelligent program with two works by two, eminent Austrian composers. You have Mozart, the biggest of all. And Schoenberg was near to us, and we wrote an exceptionally piece of music, the Transfigure Night. It was the last big romantic work ever written. It's not the Schoenberg that the people are afraid of. That was before. That was this is a very traditional work. But absolutely a work of genius. It's great. And it goes very well with the Requiem that we play on the second half. This is an absolute masterwork. It's hard to play, to say any word about such a magnificent work. This is the only thing I can say is that we try every night to do our very best to carry the work, and I am extremely happy with the Munich Symphony. It's a wonderful orchestra who played Mozart extremely well, And I am extremely happy with the American Corps that we are traveling with. And absolutely exceptional. I have done a lot of concerts with Corps before in my life, but it has never been so good. I pay as much attention to the chorus than to the orchestra. My role is to blend the two things together, the chorus and the orchestra, to balance the forces well. This is really the most difficult thing to do, you know, because the orchestra can be very loud, and the human voice has limits, of course, but it's a very powerful, very powerful core, and it's rather easy to get the right balance.
And it's so, there's so many people involved with the orchestra and the choir, and I was just wondering if what is it like to take that many people on the road together and play performances on the road?
You know, after a certain number, you don't see the difference. it's very true. We have 100 people on stage. That's all, and it's fine. It's no problem. There's no problem at all, and it's a lot of traveling involved, of course, because we are playing 17 concerts on that tour, and a lot of miles, but we survive well. Let's put it that way.
Sure. Also, it's a different concert hall every single time.
Ah, yes.
How do you deal with that?
You know, we have half an hour before every concert to get used to the acoustic of the hall. And we adjust, this is the right word, we adjust to the hall. And because it's not two halls with the same acoustics. But so far we had only very good hall. We have halls who are very resonant, very live, and making extremely pleasant sound.
That was Philippe Enchemont, the conductor for the Munich Symphony Orchestra. They'll be here tonight at the Walton Arts Center at 7 p.m. performing Mozart's Requiem and Schoenberg's Verklärte Nacht, or Transfigured Night. It's a string sextet in one movement, composed in 1899 by Schoenberg, and it's perhaps his most important early work. For tickets or more information, you can go to waltonartscenter.org or call the box office at 479-443-5600. There are still tickets available, including $10 tickets available for students who want to sit in the balcony. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, this is Katie Henriksen. Later, we'll give away two tickets to tonight's concert.
And there will be more live music to talk about this week. John Oates is performing at the UARC Bowl in Fayetteville Thursday night. Tomorrow on this program, we'll talk to him about his devotion to music inspired by the Delta and how he recruited some of the best musicians and singers in Nashville to make his latest album. That's tomorrow on Ozarks at Large. It's Tuesday, the first day of November 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm H. Vanette Grajeda.
And with us is Becca Bacon-Martin, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This would be when I say, how can it be the first of November?
No.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fall now.
Shh.
Isn't this weekend when we change the clocks?
I don't know. I can't keep track.
I think it's this coming Sunday, which means it'll be light in the morning and dark before we get home.
Okay, now that you've thoroughly depressed me, can we discuss?
Yes, we can talk about something else. How about the Munich Symphony Orchestra?
Okay.
Tonight.
Tonight, 7 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. This is a big-time performance, one mm-hmm. show only. Tickets start at $39, and you can find out more at 443-5600.
The hall is going to be filled with sound tonight.
And that's all I've got for you. So that is our pick for the day.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
150 years ago, Confederate authorities were troubled by rumors of a secret society of Union sympathizers forming in the mountains of North Arkansas. As evidence mounted pointing to concentrations of Unionists in Van Buren, Fulton, Searcy, Newton, and Izard counties, local militias and Confederate troops were called out to arrest men suspected of belonging to the Arkansas Peace Society. Amid the clamor, members of a Searcy County group disputed any charges of rebellion, issuing a statement that the charge of conspiracy is a gross and palpable falsehood, and that we are ready at any time to take up arms against any body of robbers, North or South, and to maintain the peace of our country and the liberties of our citizens. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Crist.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Wayne Bell, who writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. Wayne, it is the 1st of November. This is generally a big entertainment month. Sweeps month on television. We start getting some Oscar movies rolled out.
Yeah, it's a big month from film to TV to music. It has a couple of reasons why it's so big. First of all, for television, it sweeps month. Mm-hmm. For film, now with the abbreviated Oscar calendar, where they used to be in April and now they're in February, movies come out a little earlier. So they don't try to push them all in at Christmas now. They try to get them in November so they have some time to brew. And then from a music standpoint, the Grammy nominations come out in November for the past year. But then November, as far as a sales month, is a good month because it leads up to Black Friday. So, right. Black Friday is a big, big entertainment day to buy DVDs and things at lower prices.
So help us out. What should we be anticipating in November?
Well, today I'm very excited because there's a couple of things that have come out. And the first one is Florence and the Machine's new album, which is Ceremonials. And I was a big fan of their last album, Lungs. And they had a big hit last summer with The Dog Days Are Over. And their lead-off single, What the Water Gave Me, is really great off their new album. And the reviews, the pre-buzz on it has been really good. So that comes out. And then also Miranda Lambert, who's a big name in country music, comes out with her album 4. And U2 comes out with a reissue of Actung Baby. So you're looking at some big music sales. And then when we roll around to the 9th of November, we have some big films that start rolling in. The Clint Eastwood biop of J. Edgar Hoover comes out.
With Leonardo DiCaprio,
With
right?
Leonardo DiCaprio and Armie Hammer and Naomi Watts. And that really, if that movie can work, first of all, I'm concerned that a lot of people don't even know, a lot of his generation, Leonardo DiCaprio and younger, don't know who J. Edgar Hoover is. But at the same time, with The Aviator, not that many people knew who Howard Hughes mm-hmm. was, and he made that work. So that could be his Oscar bait. And also coming out that day is the 5-disc set of the legendary Ella Fitzgerald. So that's the name of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving her. She is legendary.
I was going to say, but, yeah.
Yeah. That it's the legendary Ella Fitzgerald 5-disc set. So that'll be really that's something to invest in maybe for the holidays. And then when we roll around to the 18th, we have Carnage, which is Roman Polanski's film of God of Carnage. And the thing to remember with all of these dates for the smaller films like Carnage and things like that is that they may come here slightly later. But those are national release dates.
But we'll get them.
Yeah, we'll get them. I mean, a lot of people get annoyed by that. But first of all, with that abbreviated calendar, the time between when we get them and when the major markets get them is smaller. So that's good. And also, you've got to understand, if you're a movie house that's got 15 screens, you know, you want to see that you're going to get some kind of production on it. So if they can roll it out to major cities first, they can see how it does. And then that'll determine where it comes. And maybe it only comes to one screen in all of Northwest Arkansas, or maybe it comes to one in every city. So
and people, I think, sometimes blame the theaters. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just not available. That's the
right.
plan is not to get it to Flagstaff or Fayetteville or someplace mm-hmm. like that until
And you've got to get some good word of mouth. And then sometimes it just doesn't happen. It mm-hmm. just doesn't come. But Carnage will. Happy Feet 2 comes out on the 18th. And first one won that Oscar for Best Animated Film. And if this one's good, I could see it doing it the same and repeating, because their big Pixar competition this year was Cars. And that wasn't the Cars 2 wasn't very as well received as right. many of the Pixar movies. And then on the 21st, Mary J. Blige comes out with her My Life 2, which is a... you know, awaited CD release. And then on the 23rd, a couple of big movies that will play into the Oscar race come out. The Artist, mm-hmm. which is the silent film detailing the last days of the silent film era, comes out. And that seems to be a big Oscar contender. And that's the kind of movie that I think is both different enough and Hollywood enough. I actually think that could win. The Descendants comes out, which is Fox Searchlight's new movie with George Clooney, and that is directed by Alexander Payne, who did Sideways and About Schmidt. And then two other releases that come out that day are Hugo, the new Martin Scorsese movie, which is kind of fantasy, mm-hmm. and My Week with Marilyn, the portrait of a 1 week in the life of Marilyn Monroe with Michelle Williams, right. who has to be considered a contender as well. And then you've got Black Friday coming up after Thanksgiving. So, you know, you've got your big sales that day, low price DVDs, electronic equipment. And I'm sure that Steve Jobs book will continue to be a huge seller. And then at the end of the month, on the 28th, we start rolling in with the awards. The New York Film Critics has bumped theirs up to November 28th. They'll announce. A week later, the National Board of Review will announce. And then on the 30th, the Grammys will start to announce their nominations for next year. And they're doing something a little different this year, because in the past, they had swollen up to about 100 categories. Now they're going to say if there haven't been 25 releases in a particular category that year, then there is no category.
So if there have only been, say, 16 or 17
comedy albums, then they won't have the category. It doesn't really affect comedy or spoken word, because there's always the books and things
polka.
Like that. Yeah, but it does affect like polka and tropical salsa music and, you know, those very specific categories. So they could range anywhere from, you know, they're trying to get it down to a more reasonable number. Like 70 instead of the 90 or 100. So that kind of rounds out the month at the end of the month. And we really start at that point talking about, you know,
best of
the Oscar race and best of the year and best of music. And so November is a busy month. And then you throw on top of that sweeps for television and the big spectacles that come out every mm-hmm. year in November. And it's a big month.
Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. Wayne, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
Last month, the first ever local food guide for Northwest Arkansas was published. Readers of the physical or online versions can find out about farmers markets, restaurants, and vendors serving, selling, and growing food locally. Two of the people responsible for the guide, Susan Drouillet and Teresa Maurer, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio just after the guide had been printed. I am holding in my hand the Northwest Arkansas Local Food Guide. Teresa, help me out here. I mean, this is something that you had kind of talked about before, and now it's reality.
Right. I mean, the ink is barely dry on the page as we speak. But this is a short but premier issue of a guide to local food. And what we're trying to do is make something that will help consumers connect with local food in lots of forms, whether that's at a market, through a community-supported ag project, or local restaurant, and just have one place to look for that. And it covers four counties. And really, we could step back and talk to Susan a little bit about how the whole idea got started.
Susan, how did the whole idea get started?
Sorry. I was, two summers ago, driving back from the East Coast back to Fayetteville, stopped in Asheville, North Carolina to visit a friend, and was at a market there and picked up a newsprint guide that was actually like a catalog of local foods for the Western Appalachian region. And I looked at it. I was completely impressed. Actually, the first thing I picked up wasn't the catalog. The first thing I picked up was a fold-out map with the whole thing laid out, each farm and each grocer highlighted. And I thought, oh, my gosh, we need one of these for the Ozarks. So I came back to Fayetteville, and I'm on the Environmental Action Committee. And so I went there first, and I talked to the folks there, and they said, yeah, that's a great idea.
And we should point out to those who don't know, the Environmental Action Committee is a committee inside the city of Fayetteville.
Right. It's one of the boards. Yep. And then I talked to friends. I've known a lot of people in the local food movement for two decades. And everybody I talked to, again, was very excited. And apparently there had been a number of efforts or some progress in various, you know, various moves toward a local food guide, but nobody had really brought one forth. And so we started putting out the word. Last November, we had our first meeting with interested folks from the area. And since then, we've had monthly meetings and connected with the local and slow food movement here in Fayetteville. So then it became a merged effort between Environmental Action Committee and the local and slow food folks here. And that's how Teresa and I connected. And here we have our first guide.
Yeah. And you know, kind of in parallel with this, I serve on a committee appointed by the mayor, the Fayetteville Forward Economic Accountability Committee, FFEIC, has a local food committee. And we'd actually been talking over 2 years about what kind of hub of information you need with a local food guide being part of it. And really, I think what happened is Susan's spark and that impetus that we'd been building up already with that local food committee kind of came together to actually make it happen.
What's interesting is that it includes farmers markets, whether it's in Fayetteville or Eureka Springs or Gravette or Berryville. It includes farms. It includes pre-order farmers markets and grocers and delis. I mean, there are a number of venues where people might be able to take advantage of this information.
Yes, and actually we had to pare down the number of categories because we wanted to start with something that was doable. When Susan asked the person who started this big multi-page color guide, how did you start? The person said 10 stapled mimeograph pages. And we said,
showed
okay.
Showed you how long ago they used the word mimeograph.
Well, yeah. Maybe not, but Xerox pages. But anyway, and so that really kind of, I think, made us bring the guide to something that was small to start with and that we truly see as a seed to grow. So we had to cut down from a lot of categories. And as a matter of fact, maybe some of the first feedback we're going to get is, why am I not in there? But that's one of the reasons we're putting it out now so that we can have a great one for 2012.
Teresa, obviously you're very active in slow food. You're a farmer. You're very connected to this sort of thing. Susan, you're with the Environmental Action Committee. So probably you were familiar with most of these entities that are included in the first local food guide. The idea here, though, is not just to preach to the choir. You're hoping, I'm sure, that people pick this up who know about very little of these options.
Exactly. Actually, you're right. We're part of the choir.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with the choir.
Right.
And we have a good idea now ourselves where to find local food. But you're right. The guide is really geared for the consumer. and geared for educating the general public about the importance of supporting our local food economy, both in terms of the environment, in terms of supporting the economy here, in terms of preserving farmland, supporting farmers, and finding the best and healthiest food right at our doorstep.
Where can people find it? Obviously at the Visitor Center?
Yes, you can find it at the Visitor Center. The farmers markets, because they kind of appear first and they're in touch with a lot of the farmers, will be another place where people will be able to find it. And we're actually just sort of mapping out our distribution right now. We only have 1,000 copies, so we want to be sure to get them in strategic places. But this is going to live online. That site is going to be unveiled very soon and will be an interactive way that we can keep up with changes that we know as soon as we print this thing, things will be changing.
And that'll be nwalocalfoodguide.org?
That's it.
That's right. And the other thing to add about this particular guide, we recognize that it's our, you know, first effort, and it is small. But the point was to have it come out in the fall, come out during this month of October when the highlight is food, and the whole Feed Fayetteville program is happening now as well. And then to generate interest before the end of the farmers market season and then get interest for our the next edition of the guide, which we hope to come out in spring 2012. So we're asking people to contact us through email and through the website to learn more about participation in the upcoming guide.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle.
Teresa Maurer and Susan Drouillet are two of the creators of the newly published Local Food Guide. There is a free digital version available at nwalocalfoodguide.org.
And earlier on the program, Antoinette, you promised listeners they'd have a chance to win a couple of tickets to the Munich Symphony tonight.
I did promise, so I'm delivering now.
Okay, so we have a question.
Well, you have a question.
I have a question. if you looked at the calendar today...
Mm-hmm.
Or if you've written the date, yes. You realize you only have to use ones.
Yeah, there's a lot of ones happening today.
11, 1, 11.
Mm-hmm.
So today's question involves ones.
All right.
In fact, it involves the number 11.
Okay.
What is 11 the atomic number for?
Awesome.
Should we make this multiple choice or should we just let people who know?
People who know can do this. Because I remember my chemistry class. My chemistry teacher is going to be so proud of me.
All right. So if you know what 11 is the atomic number for, you can call
800-522-5823.
Or if it's easier for you to remember, 800-522-KUAF. All correct answers go into the ceramic cow. This is to win two tickets to tonight's performance of the Munich Symphony. Tickets will be waiting for you at Will Call at Walton Arts Center.
Good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 1st of November, 2011. All Saints' Day in the Catholic tradition, time to honor Christian saints and martyrs. In Mexico, it's the first day of the Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead festival. The Arecibo Observatory in Arecibo, Puerto Rico, opened on this day, 1963. The largest single-aperture telescope ever built with a diameter of 1,000 feet. It's close to the equator, so it can see, by way of radio waves, all the planets in the solar system. And it led to the first discovery of planets outside our solar system. A few years ago, it began collecting data in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, looking for deliberate radio or optical signals from other planets. The U.S. Weather Bureau made its first forecast on this date, 1870. Weather Bureau had first been a part of the Army, and on November 1st, 1870, at 7:35 in the morning, 24 observers across the country made their weather observations, transmitted them to Washington, D.C. by telegraph. And a week later, they issued their first storm warning. Eventually, the Weather Bureau moved to the Department of Agriculture and then to the Department of Commerce. The first medical school for women opened on this day, 1848, in Boston, started by Samuel Gregory. It was called the Boston Female Medical College. Samuel Gregory wasn't really a supporter of women's rights, but he believed it was unseemly for male doctors to assist women in childbirth. So the college mostly served as a school for midwives at first. It was on this day, 1938, the match race of the century was run between two thoroughbreds, Seabiscuit and War Admiral. Seabiscuit, something of a hero in the Great Depression, a smaller horse, not good-looking, legs crooked, unreliable, plagued by injuries. But he was a stubborn horse, Seabiscuit, and he won a lot of races. War Admiral, on the other hand, was a tall horse. He was a gleaming, black, handsome horse. He'd won the Triple Crown. So they set up a match race between Seabiscuit and War Admiral at Pimlico in Maryland. 40,000 people in the stands, 40 million listening in on the radio. War Admiral favored 4-1. Seabiscuit broke first from the gate. War Admiral gained on him. The two of them traded the lead back and forth. And then Seabiscuit looked War Admiral in the eye and pulled away, winning by 4 lengths. Little Brown Horse, who inspired several books, including the recent bestseller by Laura Hillenbrand, Seabiscuit, An American Legend. Here's a poem for today by Hal Sirovitz, Reusing Words. "Don't think you know everything," Father said, "just because you're good with words. They aren't everything. I try to say the smallest amount possible. Instead of using them indiscriminately, I try to conserve them. I'm the only one in this household who recycles them. I say the same thing over and over again, like, who forgot to turn out the lights? Who forgot to clean up after themselves in the bathroom? Since you don't listen, I never have to think of other things to say." A poem by Hal Sirovitz, Reusing Words, from his collection Father Said, published by Soft Skull Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by CenturyLink, a new kind of broadband company linking Americans coast to coast with consistently fast speeds and personal service. More at CenturyLink.com. And by PBS, presenting The Fabric of the Cosmos, a new Nova series with physicist and author Brian Greene. Starts Wednesday, 9, 8 Central on PBS. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And time to answer our question now. It wasn't a multiple choice. It was just, do you know what 11 is the atomic number for on the periodic chart?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is?
Sodium.
Sodium.
Na, in case you were wondering.
You're very good with the periodic chart. You were assigning them for me.
I was.
I'm very impressed.
Again, my chemistry teacher is going to be very excited from high school. I remember that.
And hydrogen is number one, correct?
Hydrogen is number one.
Okay. All correct answers are going into the ceramic cow, and we will pick out a correct answer, and you will receive, the winner,
mm-hmm.
two tickets.
Yes, a pair of tickets to tonight's performance at the Walnut Center by the Munich Symphony.
That's right. And your tickets will be at Will Call tonight at Walnut mm-hmm. Arts Center. All right. So another question tomorrow. I think we have some more folk festival tickets in Eureka Springs to give away.
Yes.
KUAF is supported by Collier Drug Stores, offering a prescription refill hotline and local delivery from one of Collier's 7 locations, now including Bentonville. Most insurance plans are accepted, and information may be found on the web at collierdrug.com.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Acorn.
Where is Acorn?
North of Mena.
All right. Is it on Highway 71?
Yes.
Oh.
It is.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Mitch Megrahada.
We'll be back tomorrow with another brand new edition of the program.
Have a good day.
At noon.